Hey guys, it's J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast. This particular edition of the podcast was recorded while Matt was driving back from Indianapolis after the Bucks took on the Pacers Wednesday. This is recorded on Thursday morning. The audio is a little tricky because of, the driving, the little ambient audio. We weren't able to do it on our normal Skype service, so it was a little bit rough around the edges, but you could still hear him just fine. You can hear me just fine. Should be okay, but wanted to give you the heads up there. Thanks for checking this out. Here we go. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast, All-Star Break Edition. The Milwaukee Bucks are the best team in the NBA still as we've arrived at the All-Star Break. They take care of the Indiana Pacers on Wednesday night. They finish the first half, in air quotes, 43-14. That's a game ahead of the Raptors in the Eastern Conference. Get a very nice win over a Pacers team that's sitting in third in the Eastern Conference and do it on the road. Big showing from the Bucks once again. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast. On the other line, driving across Midwestern America, is Matt Velasquez. Matt, how was I-65 today?
Pretty empty. Just a lot of trucks. So, hands-free, talking on the phone, driving into Chicago. It's the best time for us to podcast, and I'm glad it's working out.
Yes, of course, hands-free device. We're keeping it very safe, the Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast. Try not to get anybody killed. A reminder that you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review. Find us on Stitcher or Spotify as well. I do, Matt, want to talk about this last game against the Pacers, because even without Victor Oladipo, that's still a really good team. And I kind of thought the Bucks might be in the midst of a little bit of sort of a lull. Like, maybe they really needed this All-Star break. They laid an egg against the Orlando Magic. They really had to work to beat an inferior Bulls team. And then I thought the Pacers had it. They were up 10 late-ish. I called ball game to my TV, as I am wont to do as a pessimistic Bucks fan. And then the Bucks rallied back. I mean, I guess I'm just curious off the top your thoughts on the performance, because, again, it's another sign of this Bucks team showing they have the ability to close down basketball games.
Yeah, I mean, they got out to a pretty good start. Over the course of the first half, got up by as many as 13. Giannis was dominating. The shots were going down. Just everything was clicking. And then you come out of halftime, and the Pacers just found a kind of a new level on defense. They were totally shutting off the paint. The Bucks weren't making their outside shots. Indiana really just controlled the pace and really was dictating the play on both ends of the court for, I would say, probably about 15 minutes to start the second half. And they went from being down 8 at halftime to up as many as 10 with like 9.5 minutes left. And the Bucks just looked utterly flummoxed. They didn't really have an answer. They couldn't get shots. And, then Mike Budenholzer decided to throw a little bit of a curveball. And he goes with, a little bit of a bigger lineup of Brogdon, Middleton, Adetokounmpo, Ilyasova, and Lopez. And, you're throwing out some kind of big bodies out there. And then he also asked them to switch everything. So you're not just going big, but you're getting out of your base defense, and you're switching everything, and you're trying to make things happen, and that was a really smart move at that point, because, the Bucks on defense were up to the challenge. They had guys moving around. Brook Lopez, in particular, was getting switched onto smaller guys, and then both running them off the three-point line and keeping up with them on drives and contesting shots and forcing them into difficult shots or bad passes, and the Bucks took all those defensive stops and just ramped up the pace, mostly with Giannis just charging across the court and finding open guys or finishing on his own. He had a pair of like back-to-back passes. First, kind of he had the ball along the wing at three-point arc, and you're not sure what he's going to do, and then he all of a sudden realizes Ersan is wide open under the hoop. Just darts it into him, easy bucket. Next possession, Giannis runs the middle of the floor, whips a pass to the corner to Middleton, who switches the three. All of a sudden, the Bucks are on a 7-0 run and up by 5 with just a couple minutes to go. And then Giannis has 4 straight free throws, 11-0 run, game over. Giannis had a hand in all 11 points during that run. with a bucket himself, two assists in the fourth free throws. Just a fantastic night from him, and a really great close by the Bucks in a game against, you know, like you said, a really good Pacers team.
Giannis with 33 points, 19 rebounds, 11 assists, just an incredible stat line, and one that, I mean, at this point, he gets a triple-double. It's kind of, you know, it's just kind of not that interesting. It happens all the time, and he's just continuing to show that he's one of the best, if not the best player in the NBA. And, you know, I saw him limp off the court at one point on Wednesday night, just real briefly. He was back in the game. He was fine, but, you know, it got me to thinking back to that Orlando game a couple outings previously where the Bucks really struggled. Giannis was getting a rest that day. I believe it's four games now that Giannis has not played in. Bucks won the first two convincingly regardless and then lost the last two with prior to Orlando. It was a game in Washington. And I got to thinking about it, like, what happens if Giannis has to miss any time at all in the postseason? Everybody understands if Giannis goes out, the Bucks' chances of winning an NBA title are obviously diminished to the point of, I don't know even if they're worth talking about. But let's say he has to miss a game or two or just a little bit of time. Are you convinced that this Bucks team has enough without him that they can, you know, that they could sneak by a couple games or get into the second round of the playoffs if they had to? Or is Giannis so central that they just simply cannot afford to be without him for any length of time?
The first round, I think they can handle it. Anything after that is, I don't want to say it's a death sentence, but it's close. We still haven't seen Nikola Mirotic play and what he could add and how that could affect the offense, defense, and all that stuff. But Giannis is just so huge for what they do. I mean, I think they're plus like 13 points per 100 possessions with him on the court. And they're actually positive with him off the court, you know, which is new. In the past, you know, they've been abysmal. Him off the court, now the team is good enough that when he's off the court, they can be okay. I think they're plus like 2 or 3 or something like that. But plus 13 is like, it's pretty insane. Like that's not a normal net rating for when somebody's on the court. I mean, that's elite. That's one of the highest ones in the NBA. He means so much to what they do. And I think the part of him resting and, yes, like they lost that game to the Wizards, and you know, they lost the game to the Magic. But you don't want to, you know, have to face situations down the road where you're going to lose games that matter so much more. I mean, they're 43-14 now. You know, losing those games, like, yeah, like, it would have been nice to get them, but you don't want to risk his future health in any way. You give him the opportunities to rest. He rested a lot more last season, but he also played a ton more minutes. So there's been a lot better management of him this year. He's playing less. He's still incredibly efficient when he's on the court. You know, the Bucks have spoken often about how Mike Budenholzer's kind of coaching philosophy. You know, they get in and out of practice. There are no more like long shoot-arounds, which there were plenty of long shoot-arounds last year. I know from standing around in away arenas waiting for shoot-around to be over. You know, so like they had long practices. They had more practices. And now they're kind of in and out. It's just a better management overall. And one of those times he missed was for a concussion, which, you know, that's a good reason for anyone to sit out. So, you know, I think it's important to keep him and everyone managed and healthy so that gives the best possible chance of people being healthy in the postseason, which, you know, that kind of dovetails with, you know, the fact that Nikola Mirotic, who, you know, joined the team last week via trade, he hasn't played yet in the first three games. And he has a right calf strain. I've seen him run up and down the court during practice a little bit, during shoot-around. It looks like he's getting around well. He's shooting well. He can dunk. He can do all those things. He can jump off of that leg and cut and turn. But they don't think he's totally 100% ready, and they're not going to play him until he is because they want to make sure that they are not putting anyone in harm's way.
Yeah, one of the benefits of getting Mirotic the way they did is they didn't have to sacrifice a member of the current rotation. So they actually kind of have the luxury of just letting him acclimate to the offense. Injury aside, just let him acclimate to what Mike Budenholzer's system is and not have to worry about messing with what was already there or subtracting from what was already there. That's kind of how I'm reading it, that they're just taking their sweet time because they can and they don't need to introduce him yet. He can get 100% healthy. Is that a safe read? I mean, I would certainly presume that 1 week after this Pacers game, when they resume action at home against the Celtics, that'll be the time to see Nikola Mirotic. Does that seem right to you?
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And you have to think about it this way, too. They literally haven't practiced since they got him. I mean, he was a choir on Thursday. The team was in Dallas on Friday. He got to Milwaukee on Friday. They had a back-to-back, and they played Saturday. Teams don't practice, you know, the day after a back-to-back. So, you know, that's Friday, Saturday, Sunday already accounted for. They played Monday. Tuesday, I think they were scheduled to practice, but they ended up not practicing. There's obviously snow and bad weather and all that. They were traveling from Chicago to Indianapolis. So they just left that as a travel day. I mean, he might have gone on to a court or done something here or there, talked with coaches, but they didn't really have like a full team practice. And then, you know, Wednesday you have shoot around. And during shoot around is a day that they know he's not going to play and he's not doing, you know, he's able to go through stuff. But, you know, as Mike Budenholzer said that morning, you know, shoot around isn't practice and shoot around isn't a game. It's not the same level of rigor. And then he stayed after and he did some work with Christian Wood and Trevon Duvall and some of the coaches. But, you know, that's kind of just like running up and down the court and, you know, doing a few things. So you haven't actually had a practice. And I would expect that after the All-Star break, they'll be able to come back and at least have one actual practice before taking on the Celtics in their first game back. So that will definitely be helpful. And he said last week that he plans to stay in Milwaukee and kind of get himself situated and hopefully work a little bit to keep getting himself right, getting himself ready. You know, one thing that you mentioned that I think is I agree with is that, yes, they didn't trade anybody out of their rotation to get Miritich. They just, you know, Son Maker and Jason Smith, who neither of whom have been playing a lot over the past few weeks. But one nice thing for the Bucks in all of these changes has been the reemergence of Ersan Ilyasova. There was about, you know, almost a month-long stretch there where he was giving them not very much, if anything. And so, you know, the past few games, he's been, you know, a really key contributor. He had 12 points against the Bulls, which tied his career high, his season high. He tied his season high there. 8 points in the first quarter when the Bucks' offense really, like, you know, hadn't gotten going yet. And then 12 points all came in the first half. And then, you know, Wednesday night against the Pacers, you know, he was part of that closing lineup, and he, you know, he was able to score 11 points. He took multiple charges, was solid on defense, grabbed a couple rebounds, just really solid, and gave them the look that they needed for that particular night to end up coming away with the win. So it's been huge for them having Ersan, you know, back, really.
And yeah, I was going to ask if you thought the lack of minutes for DJ Wilson in these last two games against Chicago and Indiana was just proportionally related to how well Ilyasova has played again. He's, like you said, he's definitely popped back to life, and maybe the Miritich trade is part of the catalyst there, but folk hero DJ Wilson was getting single-digit minutes over the last couple games, which was somewhat surprising. He'd have been in the 20s in the previous two games since we last podcast, the win in Dallas over the Mavericks and the loss in Orlando. So that's kind of what I was just gathering. Ilyasova was playing well, and DJ just sat the bench while that was happening.
Yeah, and that's the really good thing about the Bucks is their depth. Like, you're going to have, you know, nights where you need to play a certain way and someone's going to play more than somebody else. Like, you know, last night Eric Bledsoe didn't play very much. I think he played like 21 or 22 minutes, and, you know, he wasn't great. You know, just kind of like 1-for-4 from the field. You know, not really at his same level offensively. Defensively, he just wasn't what he's been. It was just a night where, you know, he didn't have it. And he's had it for a lot of the season, as Mike Budenholzer was saying last night after the game. And, you know, he's picked the team up in plenty of fourth quarters and close games and all that. You know, but he needed his teammates to pick him up. And then this one. So, you know, you kind of like ride the ebbs and flows of the season. And when you have a roster that can really go 8, 9, 10, 11 deep, you know, with guys contributing, and you can kind of fit different, you know, groupings of players together to kind of match or exploit whatever the other team's doing, it gives you a lot of different ways to win. And, you know, I don't think any of us necessarily would have predicted a closing lineup of Brogdon, Middleton, you know, Adetokounmpo, Ilyasova, and Lopez, but there we are, and it worked wonders.
We'll probably talk more about the individual opponents that could potentially face off with the Bucks in the postseason as we get closer to the end of the season. But this Pacers team is interesting, and with Oladipo out, it's a different look, but that's still a dangerous team. Like we said, right now they're the 3 seed in the East. If the season ends today, the Bucks would potentially face them in the Eastern Conference semifinals. It's obviously thinking way far ahead. But what do you think of that? What's if the Pacers and the Bucks were to meet again? What are the areas that you, I guess, what are the matchups to really watch if these two teams were to run into each other?
Well, you know, one of them would be Giannis and Thad Young, which, you know, the last time the Bucks played the Pacers was December 12th. The Bucks lost 113-97. Giannis was held to 12 points and just 4-6 shooting. A lot of that was with Thad Young defending him. And Young had a great night that night, 25 points of his own on 9-of-14 shooting. And that kind of started a narrative, or at least a belief among the Pacers that, hey, like, you know, Thad Young is a Giannis stopper. He can affect Giannis and limit him and all this stuff. And it was very clear from the early going last night that Giannis was having none of that. That he very much was affected by that previous game. He was frustrated immediately after it at the time, and then responded with tying his career high the next night, or 2 nights later against Cleveland, and really kind of breaking out in that game. You know, but then in the first quarter on Wednesday, Giannis comes out, and he's already got 13 points on 5-of-7 shooting, attacking the rim at every chance he got, you know, going one-on-one against Young, spinning, dunking, layups, everything. Just, like, refused to be stopped. And then, as you mentioned, his crazy stat line, you know, obviously finished the game well. And after the game, you know, I asked him, I was like, hey, like, how much was that previous game against the Pacers, you know, weighing on you? How much were you thinking about that, you know, coming into this one? He's like, oh, well, you know me, I'm a really competitive guy. And then kind of he went on and said, like, that game he wasn't at his best, he didn't play well, you know, but he kind of just decided that if you have a will to dominate, it's going to work. And so he came into this game with a will to dominate, and just exerted it on the Pacers. And, you know, later in his post-game interview session, he was kind of asked about Thad Young, about how, you know, he's had some good games defensively and really kind of limited Giannis in the past. And Giannis, like, the question didn't even come any further. Giannis says, oh, come on, man. Like, you know, and he just said that, basically something that I've heard him say before. He's like, hey, I'm not trying to be arrogant or cocky because that's not who I am, but there's no one guy who can stop me. You know, he says, hey, teams need to send multiple guys and load to me and swarm me. Like, that's how you stop me. But, like, you can't do it by yourself. You know, that knows great, but, you know, no one can do it by themselves. So it's definitely some confident talk from Giannis. I don't think it's anything untrue.
Yeah, I think I misspoke. If the season ended today, the Bucks wouldn't see the Pacers until the Eastern Conference Finals, but still a matchup that could come to pass at some point.
Sure. And, you know, you look at another matchup, too, is that is Middleton and Bogdanovich. I mean, they both got size, and Bogdanovich is a little bit of a better shooter, at least right now. And Middleton just, like, couldn't shake loose and really kind of get comfortable and knock down any shots until the fourth quarter when he scored 8 of his 15 points. Bogdanovich, you know, I don't know what his final stat line was, but just seems like he's the kind of guy who gives Milton Fitz. And if we look ahead to a potential playoff matchup, and obviously the teams will play together one more time at Fiserv Forum, you know, Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis up front, you know, just both give the Bucks fits for the different things that they can do. So, you know, this Pacers team, even without Oladipo, like, they added Wesley Matthews on the buyout market, you know, they're still good. I mean, before last night's game, they were on a 6-game win streak, and they very reasonably could have won last night. So, you know, I don't think they're going away. You know, maybe they slip to the 4 or the 5. You know, they're only one game ahead of Boston and Philly. But, like, you know, those three teams, like, they're definitely going to be engaging in a war down the stretch because no one wants to stay in that 4-5 game. That 4-5 game is just going to be – that series is going to be hellish, whoever ends up being in it.
Yes, Bogdanovich was getting fired up last night as the Bucks were pulling away late. It was you know, kind of exciting to see if you're a Bucks fan to see the frustration on one of the better players on the opponent's sideline. We've talked obviously a lot about all the great things the Bucks have done well. As we now hit this sort of theoretical halfway point, is there something that concerns you? You know, that we're going to enter the home stretch of the season. Is there anything at all that you say to yourself, you know, the Bucks aren't doing this as well as they were earlier in the year, or there's something maybe to just keep an eye on? Is there anything at all for this team?
You know, it's hard to think of too much. I mean, 43-14, best record in the NBA, the best defense in the NBA, one of the best offenses in the NBA, one of the best players in the NBA. You know, there's just a lot going for them, and we still haven't even seen Mirotić yet and how he's going to fit. I mean, I guess maybe that could be something where, you know, you wonder how that fit's going to be and how long it'll take to build that chemistry. I don't think it'll take that long just because the Bucks system is pretty simplified and does seem to fit what he can do pretty well. Just you have to kind of wonder, like, you know, how that fit will be, but it still should be a minimal adjustment. I mean, there are periods where the offense it just doesn't fit right, and whenever teams can kind of tamp down on Giannis, like we saw in that third quarter, maybe that could be an issue, you know, where sometimes you get into too big of a hole, maybe you can't fight your way back as you did in the fourth quarter. But there have just been so many games that have gotten into holes like that where they have fought back that, you know, it gives you reason to believe that they can really battle back from most deficits. Whether they can actually win or not, you know, it's up for debate in those games. It doesn't always happen. But they can be competitive when they're, you know, really play hard and change things on defense to keep the opponent off balance. I mean, they're just doing so many things well. I think the hope for them would be that they would be able to use this All-Star break to, you know, get even healthier, to kind of rechannel their kind of focus and stay sharp to go down the stretch run and head into the playoffs with some momentum. But there's just not too many things that, like, I think that are, you know, need to be worried about.
The All-Star game is kind of a fun showcase. It is in no way representative of actual NBA basketball. It's a highlight reel offense fest, and Giannis has taken part before. We'll see Chris Middleton in the three-point shooting contest on All-Star Saturday in Charlotte. I'm curious what you're looking forward to. What are one or two things? Maybe it's seeing Coach Bud manage Team Giannis. Anything in particular that you're pretty excited to see as we head into the All-Star weekend?
Well, on Wednesday at Shootaround, I was talking to Bud, along with some other reporters, including Kate Pittman, Eric Name, guys who also cover the Bucks, you know, on a pretty regular basis. And, you know, I asked Bud, like, you know, okay, who among the coaching staff coaches the Rising Stars game? You know, because that honor goes to one of the assistants. He goes, oh, Darvin will do that. Darvin Ham will coach the Rising Stars game. And as we go, is that like a draw straws type situation? Like, I don't know if guys want that responsibility. It's like, oh no, like Darvin's my lead assistant. Like he'd replace me if I got ejected or anything like that. We're like, oh, ejected at the All-Star game? And then he kind of relayed a little egg. I guess someone sent him a message that I guess Red Auerbach got ejected in some All-Star game back in like the 60s.
Oh, jeez.
And so now I just want to see like someone get ejected at the All-Star game, like some coach, which would be wonderful. I mean, it's one of the nonsensical things that like really doesn't matter, but like it would just be really fun and like stupid and great. So I've kind of talked myself into that. I think All-Star Saturday will be fun. You know, they have obviously Steph and Seth Curry, you know, in the 3-point contest, you know, in Charlotte, which would be kind of a cool vibe. You know, seeing Chris Middleton do it for the second time. You know, we'll see what he can do. Maybe that can be kind of a fun breakout moment for him. Or, you know, just he actually was asked about it after the game last night. He's like, oh, I'm not thinking about that at all. Like, it's whatever. I'm just gonna show up there and do what I do. You know, but if he can do something, that's kind of interesting. Makes for you know, definitely you know, a more involved night. And then, you know, just the game itself. You know, having guys like Dwayne Wade and Dirk Nowitzki as like kind of legacy players in the game, you know, that'll be that'll be fun. I thought that I already had my last chance to see Dirk, so having one more opportunity is definitely welcome to make some memories. You know, the whole LeBron Giannis head to head thing, you know, is there's definitely a storyline there. And then, you know, Giannis has that, there's that documentary, that Finding Giannis documentary coming out Saturday night, which, you know, I believe that I've seen and heard and read a lot about Giannis, and supposedly this thing will have more exclusive stuff in it. So, you know, I'm always down to learn more things about Giannis and be able to talk about that. So, yeah, I think it'll be a pretty interesting All-Star weekend with lots of things going on.
He's just an absolute treat. He, off the court, Giannis is, in addition to being so great on the court. Saw footage of his interview after the Indiana game where he's talking about what he's going to do leading into the All-Star game, how he's going to take a nap, he's going to get a haircut and look handsome. He's just he's in all these commercials. He's in in-flight airline safety videos now. He's just a very engaging personality, which has been the icing on the cake for a guy who has had an unbelievable NBA, you know, MVP type season.
Also, can we talk about his TV choices? He was saying how he watched a bunch of, like, MTV and, like, the Kardashians and, like all these shows. I don't know any of them. They're definitely trash TV shows. but he called them dramas, and he loved dramas.
The Kardashians are one kind of drama.
I was confused, and yes, I get it. Like, when I was 24, like, did I love... like MTV, I kind of did. Like, did I love like all those like crazy dating shows they had? Like, absolutely. Like that was like a favorite. Maybe it was like, you know, 20 to 24. Like, that's a good range for watching like Date My Mom and Next or like Room Raiders or whatever. Like, so like no judgment for me, because those shows are treasures, and maybe it's just like a new generation of shows that are. To him what those were to me, but like, oh boy, like that's quite the lineup that he listed off. But you know, good for him. If his idea of a good All-Star break is sleeping and having breakfast and watching bad TV shows, he is even more relatable than I thought he was.
Yeah, that's my idea of a good All-Star break, but it's a nice portal and a reminder that he's still 24 years old. You know, he is the type of kid who would roll out of bed and watch MTV, and I love the fact that he's also ridiculously dominant and fun to chat with, and now he's going to be the captain of his own All-Star team on Sunday in Charlotte. That should be a fun watch, as well as All-Star Weekend, three-point competition, dunk contest, all of that. Matt Velasquez, we're going to take a week off. We got no Bucks basketball to talk about in the next week unless something crazy happens in the All-Star game. So I'll be chatting with you in a couple weeks, and we will resume this march toward greatness that the Milwaukee Bucks have been on.
Sounds good to me.
That is all we got. Like I said, a week off here, unless something crazy happens in the All-Star game. We'll be back with you in 2 weeks to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks. They've got some big games coming up right out of the chute. It'll be the Celtics, the Timberwolves also coming to Pfizer Forum. Then they go back to Chicago to face the Bulls. They're in Sacramento. Those are two games starting another five-game road trip. You know, the Bucks have kind of had a ton of road games in a row, and that doesn't stop after the All-Star break. After back-to-back home games, they'll be back on the road. I believe it's something like 8 of the next 11 away from Pfizer Forum. So if the Bucks can make it through that stretch, certainly they've handled this road, these road tests pretty well so far. If they can make it through that stretch at the same pace they're on now, I think it's safe to say the Bucks are going to be very much on their way to the top seed in the East as we head toward the end of the season. That's already you know, pretty close to wrapping up. I kept saying the halfway point, which of course is a little bit of a wink and a nudge with that, because we're well past the halfway point. April 10th. 10th is the final game of the regular season. So as we roll into March Madness, the Bucks will be doing the same and prepping for what is hopefully a lengthy run in the playoffs. For Matt Velasquez, thanks again. I'm J.R. Radcliffe. Let me know if you have any feedback on Twitter. We prefer the feedback to come through the Apple Podcasts channel. In fact, I still don't think we've gotten a fresh comment since this podcast was sort of reintroduced with me as the host. So please let me know what you think. I'd love to know, but feel free to call me as well or rather tweet at me as well at J.R. Radcliffe, J-R-R-A-D-C-L-I-F-F-E, and we'll be happy to respond to that. Thanks so much for listening to the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. We'll catch you in a couple weeks.